Ross and the Rider. Part 1. The Receipt. Picture a cosmopolitan city, steel grey and glass green. Picture gorgeous skyscrapers brimming with architectural featurettes. Picture the office of a TV network throbbing with information and gasping with urgency. Picture 5 News. In a gleaming plastic studio with a window on the skyline, the on-air light clicked off. Slovenly director Kenny Gow grumbled
"Cut!"
and plopped down in a folding stool for a breather as the spotlights were switched off and the ceiling lights came on. Peter Quinnell Live, voted 2016's most popular interview and light entertainment presenter in a modestly circulated industry publication, stood up from the desk at which he'd just delivered his program. He could hear the jeering that sounded up from his colleagues the moment the cameras were switched off, and he just barely acknowledged it with a mild grimace. He had half an idea that it was directed at him. It was the full way directed at him. It wasn't happening now for any particular reason. It was just something they did. They'd started doing it and found they liked it. He hadn't said anything about it, so they'd formed a habit. Peter Quinnell Live pushed back from his desk, a slick acrylic behemoth, and trotted on brisk little hooves along to his corner office. As he trotted, he hummed loudly with an open mouth. He hummed. It was annoying, sure. The simple fact was that he was an annoying guy. He had a very rare and special way of being annoying, the kind that ends up in a corner office. The kind of guy who a boss who doesn't see him too often thinks is dynamic. On the way to his corner office, Peter Quinnell Live winked at colleagues, who quickly checked to see if anyone around them had noticed, and blushed in humiliation if they had. When he got to his corner office door, he took a bit of paper from the printer tray and kicked at the small heap of empty cardboard coffee cups that collected in the doorway. People had put them there as a message. The message was a stark and obvious one, conveying the boldest disrespect, but it missed its mark. At his desk, Peter Quinnell Live clicked open the latch of his brutalist black leather briefcase and placed the bit of paper inside. The bit of paper was blank. It was a symbolic bit of paper. Its placing symbolized a conclusion of business. Peter Quinnell Live was the host of 5 News' leading opinion-based news program. He was a perfect news anchor, gleaming and obvious, a smartly polished shell empty as a dry beach conch, home to a whisper of moving air and a few dry grains of sand. He had a bland white face and symmetrical features that were unpleasant to look at when they poked through the neck of anything other than a $1,500 navy blue suit. He had a dark beard and moustache that he wore short and which was so perfectly neat and uniform that they were indefinably comical. His body was gently muscled and his hands were medium in size. If he were seated before you and a platoon of armed terrorists secured the exits, unbuttoned their bulky black wind cheaters and placed the cold black barrel of a loaded gun perpendicular to your temple and told you that
your life and the lives of everyone else in the room depend on a definitive answer to the question of whether Peter Quinnell Live is handsome or not,
you'd still probably exhale and briefly gaze into the middle distance before responding. He was nearly impossible to be interested in. Peter Quinnell Live's real name was Peter Quinnell Live. His father was Henry Quinnell, a sales executive who had made a lot of money from pesticides, lawn care products, and patio furniture. His mother was Irina Live and had met his father while working at a cafe owned by her parents, Pyotr and Olga Livanov, who had anglicized their name when they emigrated to Australia in the 1920s. Peter Quinnell Live's program was also called Peter Quinnell Live, a nifty branding trick that Kenny 5 News executives had seized on for its convenient ambiguity. His show was taped hours before it aired each night, allowing editorial hacks and unprecedented level of control over the program's content. The name was superficially truthful and deeply misleading, a neat if undersold metaphor for the theatre of news itself. The briefcase into which Peter Quinnell Live placed his piece of blank paper was full of litter that he'd accumulated, and the collected bulk stopped the case from bobbling lightly against his knee when he walked. It endowed a professional weight. He snapped the briefcase smartly shut again and strode out of the open-planned area of the newsroom where it was 6 p.m. and the setting sun on the 5 News building's westerly aspect lit furious blocks of garish, searing pink through the tinted fourth-floor windows, onto the grey desks and cupboards and computers and news tickers and the colleagues of Peter Quinnell Live who'd just finished the taping of the show named after him. Their faces were illuminated, dramatically neon. Their mouths and noses and eye sockets were terrifying as they hurled torrents of plaintive, loathsome abuse at Peter. He walked the aisle cheerfully. Bilious hatred roiled around him as thick as smoke. There was bird-like Janice, the autocue operator, who spat on him. There was bald and rotund Perry, the sub-editor, who looked in Peter's eyes and drew a thumb across his throat so forcefully it left a white line. There was dour Amelia, the office manager, who had blue mouth and glowered hatefully in silence. Tara, the intern, who was hot, shuddered as he approached and muttered, "By God, do not look at me." Peter Quinnell Live was simply incapable of comprehending them. He ambled generously through the glass newsroom doors, along the purple carpeted corridor to the central bank of elevators. He beamed benignly at reporters Steve, Sophie and Aaron, who screwed up their faces sarcastically and continued their conversation without him. They loathed him deeply because he was a gormless fat cat with plump skin and nice fingernails, and they fearlessly manifested their hatred in social settings because his cheery demeanor and lifetime of comfort prevented him from ever really grasping that someone might truly despise him. "Nice evening," Peter Quinnell Live remarked towards the group. They stared at him in bald disgust. "Excuse me, we're eating," Sophie replied. Peter rode the elevator to the ground floor, where Hansi, the doorman, screwed up his square German face and rolled his eyes theatrically as Peter approached.
"Auf Wiedersehen, Mr. Quinnell,"
he called sarcastically in a voice that sounded like a 50-year-old German man doing an impression of a whiny baby, because it was.
"Don't pinch your skin in any doors or windows, ha ha!"
Peter shot him a look he thought was icy and judgmental, but read visually as blank.
"Auf Wiedersehen, Hansi," he called,
a slight peevishness in his voice. He was unlikely to pinch his skin in anything. That wasn't even the point. Hansi drove an Audi and his aunt was on the board of the Art Gallery of New South Wales, so his insult was meaningful. It was busy as Peter Quinnell Live exited the building and made his way up George Street through the throng of late afternoon foot traffic towards the train station. Peter caught the train as a form of marketing. If anyone asked why, he'd usually shrug humbly and say, "Why not?" If the person asking was in the know, media savvy, he might also jerk a smug thumb towards his face and say, "This is the best billboard there is." 9 times out of 10, he'd add a chuckle for a pinch of self-deprecation. Naturally, it was phony. As he strode up the busy thoroughfare, the throng of commuters swarmed and billowed around him. At times, it felt as though it billowed through him, he thought, as though Peter Quinnell Live were a windsock on a lonely stretch of airfield, and the pedestrians the brutish gusts he was designed to endure. As he walked, passers-by recognised him from their TV screens and screamed blunt jocularities at him.
"Hey, Peter Quinnell, aren't you supposed to be on TV soon?"
"Shouldn't that be Peter Quinnell taped?"
Peter Quinnell Live ignored them and squeezed the briefcase handle tightly, just in case some irate mother of two decided to stop him in his tracks, browbeat him, accuse him of ruining her husband's plumbing business, wrench the case from his grasp, pop the latches and scatter his items to the evening breeze. The items on this particular evening were as follows. A to-do list, one paper chewing gum wrapper, one empty plastic water bottle, one newspaper from several weeks ago, nearly 20 receipts issued by the various retail vendors who eased their way through Peter Quinnell Live's daily existence, lubricated by his weakness for anyone who exhibited any hint of friendship towards him, and the vague existential guilt he felt when confronted by a retail worker, and a tiny bear in a waistcoat whose soft-touch plastic exterior concealed a spring-loaded peg which enabled its arms to grip mightily.
"Peter Quinnell Live? Can't be. You must have already taped tonight's show,"
bantered the railway man guarding the entry gates to the station, one eye fixed on the tiny television in the corner of his booth and the other on the gang of teenagers who, like graceful African prey animals, had skimmed the tops of the barrier gates without touching on a valid ticket and made for the stairs out of the station. A heavy-set man in overalls had paused to regain his breath halfway up the stairs and they pushed on the back of his knee with a foot, causing him to buckle.
"Wah!"
the man yelled. "Yes," Peter Quinnell Live mumbled to the railway man, opening his masculine black leather wallet and putting out his prepaid electronic ticket card. The gates parted with a clunk. As he rode the escalator down to the platform, he mumbled an affirmation. "I'm Peter Quinnell Live. I'm Peter Quinnell Live. I'm Peter Quinnell Live," he mumbled. The escalator clicked and rumbled rhythmically. Da-dunk, da-dunk, da-dunk. He timed his affirmation with the rhythm. It was his way of remaining tranquil. Peter Quinnell Live. He rolled through life easily and lazily, like a marble in a platter of honey. Peter Quinnell Live. But from time to time, nerves caught up with him. Peter Quinnell Live. He enjoyed feeling calm and in control and feared the brittle unpredictability of panic more than anything. Peter Quinnell Live. The smooth authority of his own attractive baritone voice reassured him, he found, in stressful social situations like urinating in the company of other men or using public transport. Peter Quinnell Live. His name purchased him status and respect, and his nerves settled as he repeated it. The tiles on the walls interlocked like a shark's teeth. Peter Quinnell Live. He descended. He felt the air grow warmer. Peter Quinnell Live. The odor of train brakes crawled into his nostrils. Peter Quinnell Live. The escalator smoothed out and he stepped onto the platform. Maybe 10 meters away, an elderly man with a grotesque bald head bellowed something inaudible, and Peter Quinnell Live angled his face to avoid what he presumed was an incoherent racist tirade. Never be part of the story. An angry racist on a busy city train platform meant a better than even chance that someone would film it on their phone and post it online. And what would it say about Five News' Peter Quinnell Live to appear in the background of a viral video about a racist? But as he continued down the platform, Peter Quinnell Live realized the man was merely singing joyously in what sounded like Greek. He was disappointed. Now that he had no chance of appearing in the background of a viral video, he wondered if it was just what he needed, and he felt irritated that the opportunity had been yanked away from him. Awkwardness abandoned him. The script now seemed natural. He could have taken control of the situation, drawn himself up to his full height, sternly reprimanded the old Greek for both his views and his manner of delivering them, evinced some kind of retraction or apology. The moment would have been captured by a tech-savvy bystander and the footage run at the top of every major bulletin for the next 24 hours. Newsman Peter Quinnell Live, the victim of shocking racist tirade on a Sydney train. Peter was as white as a cheap business shirt, but still the headline lingered sweetly on his tongue. As he approached the old Greek, the disappointment registered on his face, and his maudlin expression caused the man to falter, and for a moment to stop singing. The other cohabitants of the platform turned their faces towards the two men to understand what had happened. Peter was humiliated. He reached into his wallet and pulled out a crisp $20 bill and threw it at the old man. His face burned. He turned and hurried down the platform to the furthest reach where the sprinkling of headphone students and pram mothers wouldn't know what he'd done. Nothing I could have helped there, Peter Quinnell Live mumbled to himself as he fished through one jacket pocket for a pair of earphones. A receipt fell out. He plugged the earphones into his phone and scrolled through the list of artists curated in a playlist titled Simply PQL. The playlist was filled with the most prestigious names in piano music. Italians, Germans, whatever. The names whizzed past. Famous compositions for the piano that had the power to whisk Peter Quinnell away at the stroke of a thumb. Adagio, G major, inscrutable ciphers marking doors of perception. Behind each door, Peter was driving a late model white car with a tan leather convertible roof through the winding roads of Europe. His elbow rested on the wound down window, and Neapolitan ice cream dripped from a waffle cone onto the tarmac whizzing past. Overhead, pigeons soared. All around him, tomatoes and grapes ripened on the vine. Wizened peasants propped their chins on their spades and squinted at him as he sped past. Mister, a peasant called. Peter drove on. Mister, a peasant's voice repeated, and the voice's owner tapped on Peter's shoulder. Mr. Peter Quinnell from the TV? Peter's reverie faded, and he opened his eyes and processed the sight of the old singing Greek before him. Peter Quinnell Live, he told the Greek. The second half of my surname is Live. It doesn't denote the format of the show. The old man thrust Peter's $20 note back towards him. You dropped this. The golden confidence freshly imbued in him by his piano-induced European jaunt fell away like a sheet. His face lost its colour. Eloquence abandoned him, and he stammered, It's for you. No thank you, the Greek said. I don't need this money. I'm not a beggar. I'm the chairman of a very large urban development. Thank you for your generosity, but it is misplaced. He placed the bill in Peter's hand. Peter moaned weakly in response. The Greek turned on his heel. And as he pivoted, his foot found the slick thermal paper receipt that had fallen from Peter Quinnell Live's pocket. He spun clumsily for a moment. Then the momentum took him and he fell fast and heavy. His arms pinwheeled. He careened from the edge of the platform onto the tracks and into the path of an oncoming train, which macerated his tiny body in an instant. The train squealed and groaned and Peter Quinnell Live's fellow commuters screamed, but he heard nothing. The station was silent in his ears. The light grew dark and the air grew cold. Peter asked his eyes, "Did you really see this?" And his eyes responded, "Yes, we did." He asked his ears, "Did you really hear this?" And his ears responded, "Yes, we did." Peter's numb hands felt in the left pocket of his masculine black suit jacket for the receipt from Grocery World, verifying his purchase of one large-sized box of Special K and some frozen fish fingers, and found it missing. He wondered, could that really be my docket? And he knew. Yes, it could. Reality resumed for Peter Quinnell Live's nose first. A thick fog of burning train brakes and blood filled the station. He smelled human shit. A young woman leaning against a column slowly slid down it into a crumpled heap on the hot tiles. A delicate spritz of red was visible at the edge of the platform. A university student, perhaps a couple of metres from where Peter stood, slung his heavy backpack down in one hand by his side and said to Peter, in a way that seemed as though the statement was less for Peter's acknowledgement and more for God's, "You killed him." There was a roar in Peter Quinnell Live's ears that was unbearably loud, and he shouted, "I didn't! It wasn't me! You pushed him! I saw him fall," said the student. "I didn't," Peter said again. "It was an accident." He looked around him and saw the people looking up from their phones at him. He looked on the wall and saw a CCTV camera up the platform, pointed away from him. "It wasn't me," he croaked wildly, beginning to walk unsteadily back to the escalators. A man stood in his way. "You can't leave," the man said. Peter pushed past him and walked up the escalators. He'd felt short of breath, but as he powered his way up the long incline, his legs began to work. The super speed of his step and the escalator's upward motion soothed him. He glided, and the hubbub from the platform below faded. He stepped faster. Was he in shock? He couldn't tell. He understood from his career as a newsman that it was commonplace for witnesses to a tragedy like this to go into shock, but he didn't feel in shock. He felt strangely renewed. He felt purposeful. As he swiped his ticket, he nodded at the railway man and told him waveringly, "There's been an accident down there, a horrible one." On he walked, through the gates, up the stairs and back out to the street. The teens who'd tormented the oaf looked to him and then scattered as an approaching siren cut through the afternoon air. Peter Quinnell Live hailed a cab and climbed into the back seat.
"Peter Quinnell Live?" said the taxi driver.
"Yes," Peter responded, "but we'd pre-record the show." The taxi driver snorted with satisfaction.
"Thought you mightn't have much of a sense of humour about that, mate," he said.
"I get it all the time," Peter told him, adding a gesture he presumed would add a certain collegial bonhomie. The cabbie flinched.
"Settle down," he told Peter resentfully. "Just take me home, please," Peter demanded, repeating the gesture as a way of subconsciously affirming it as an acceptable mode of non-speech communication.
The cabbie took it badly and growled,
"Get out of my car."
He wrenched aggressively on the handbrake and jabbed one hairy finger at his hazard lights. On any other day, Peter Quinnell Live's face would have bloomed a rich purple red at the social humiliation. But today he simply stuffed an apologetic $20, the $20 from the old Greek actually, in the cabbie's hand, opened the door and resumed his post on the pavement.
"Goodbye,"
he hollered as the car sped off. Another taxi approached. As Peter raised one smallish hand in anticipation, his gaze drifted to the summit of the steps leading down into the train station. There stood the heavyset man in overalls, the railway man, the young woman from the platform, along with two burly members of the police force. As the cab pulled up, Peter saw the young woman's eyes settle upon him, and as it sped away, his fearful gaze caught the woman and the oaf pointing accusatory fingers in his direction. Rattled and suddenly afraid, Peter gave an address around the corner from his apartment to the driver, who, surely alone among the city denizens, appeared not to recognize him. Peter was relieved. Perhaps it was best, if he was to be implicated in the death of a commuter, that his driver not recognize him. Chagrin set in almost immediately. Why hadn't he been recognized? He was the face of news in this city. He was a face of news, at least. Few could argue that the name Peter Quinnell Live was not associated with television news.
"You watch TV much?" he asked the driver.
The driver pointed solemnly at a laminated square tacked to the dashboard, which read, "Hi, I'm Carl. I've taken a vow of silence. I'm happy to listen to you. Have a great day."
"So that's a no," Peter inferred, looking at Carl for confirmation.
Carl shrugged.
"A bit of TV?" Peter queried, his indignance returning.
Carl nodded.
"What kind?"
Carl looked stoically out the windscreen at an enormous billboard advertising Channel 12's nightly news bulletin, The 7 with Jason Strasbourg, and nodded. Peter was miffed.
"You watch Strasbourg? Oh no," he muttered.
He was more than miffed. He was disgusted.
"Let me tell you, Carl, I've worked in news a long time and Strasbourg's
He tailed off. In the rearview mirror, Carl looked at him expectantly.
"He's a pervert," Peter blustered.
Well, it wasn't true, but he'd said it. At least he didn't know Strasbourg wasn't a pervert. He could well be one in private. In the mirror, Carl's mouth formed a shocked O and his face sharpened with the kind of interest that Peter's newsman career had taught him meant Carl was on the ropes. He'd leaned in, as Peter's boss Judith would have said. He couldn't stop now.
"Oh yes," he gushed lyingly. "He touches women. Awful, awful, very abusive. A monster."
The nostrils in the rearview mirror flared.
And he touches men as well, Peter blustered. I can tell you for a fact that a good friend of mine, the word of whom I know to be beyond redoubt, has been accosted physically in the men's room by Strasbourg on more than 3 occasions.
He knew it was wrong. He felt lightheaded.
Strasbourg touched his penis.
In the rearview mirror, Carl huffed heavily through his thick moustache. Peter remembered the thrill of breaking the story, a sensation he hadn't felt since he was a junior reporter. He was elated.
And he sucks his own dick,
he blurted, and in an instant, the magic was gone. He'd overcooked the story. Carl lowered his head and stared accusingly at Peter through the rearview mirror. The heavy brows changed their alignment. They screamed disappointment. The lips pursed slightly. For the first time today, Peter felt ashamed. He sat silently. The taxi pulled up around the corner from Peter's apartment building. He climbed the short flight of marble steps to the threshold and swung open the heavy plate glass door. He pressed the elevator button and stood back, shivering in the cool, stale air of the atrium. He made the decision to allow himself the luxury of a vacant moment, enjoying the silence. But as he tried, he saw again the elderly Greek, arms akimbo, flailing in brutally slapstick slow motion towards the edge of the platform and into the space where moments later the train would be. It seemed to Peter that he would like to stop the memory here, but he tried and couldn't. His hands began to sweat, his head grew light as the memory continued. The topple, the drop, the silence, the rush of screeching metal and brakes and human screams resuming like an unpaused video. It was in Peter's ears and eyes and nostrils again, especially the nostrils. The sickening cocktail of burning brakes and pulverized human parts. The elevator doors slid open. Peter Quinnell Live stepped in and exhaled deeply. Thanks for listening to the first episode of The Horse and the Rider. It's an original novel-length audio story written, read, and produced by me, Max Laverne. There'll be new episodes weekly until it's done. If you liked it, please subscribe and share it.